Welcome to a special edition of the 155 Election Podcast, the Ward 8 Hamilton City Council by-election. Episode 166.
Lohifa Pogason-Acker, you are running for Ward 8 City Councilor in the by-election. Welcome to the 155 Podcast.
Thank you, Joey. I'm excited to be here.
Firstly, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I was born in Nigeria, so I am Nigerian. My family came to Canada in 2000. We landed in Vancouver, BC, and I moved to Hamilton in the year 2012 in pursuit of my parents because they moved here first and I wanted to be close to them, having come back from working overseas for a while. And I love Hamilton. It's been a beautiful time here in the city. My background's in public health and international development, so I've worked in health system strengthening professionally. And in 2019, I decided that I wanted to venture into entrepreneurship. And I started my business called Lo Did That. It's a hairstyling business offering bespoke hairstyling services, textured hairstyling services to people from all walks of life. I love to empower people with their hairstyles and giving them a cause to have joy in their daily lives. And so I've worked with clientele from all over. I've worked on Netflix. I've worked on Netflix shows. I mean, I've worked on Canada's Drag Race, which was filmed here in Hamilton in season one. And I love this city. I love this town.
Why are you running for Ward 8 Councillor and why should we vote for you?
That's a great question, Joey. When I moved to Hamilton in 2012, I moved to Hamilton because back then I was told that Hamilton was the best place to raise a family or wanted to be the best place to raise a family and to age successfully. And because my parents had moved here and I wanted to be closer to them, I thought it was a good decision. Of course, with my background being in healthcare, I was also interested in working in the healthcare industry here, which I eventually did. Now, over the last decade and a bit since I've been here, Hamilton has not fulfilled that obligation that attracted me to begin with. I do not believe that at this time Hamilton is the best place to raise a child. I also do not believe that at this time most people feel that Hamilton is the best place to age successfully. Can that be changed? Absolutely. Are we on course to changing it? Absolutely not. And what is the missing piece there? For me, I feel that the missing piece is leadership. Leadership who's embedded in community, leadership who is connected to community, leadership that exemplifies the vision and the needs and the desires of community. So I'm running because I know that there is a long-standing gap in this city, and I know that I have what it takes to fill it. I feel like most people, I am very tired of being in a city with so much potential. People always say Hamilton has so much potential, so much potential. Can we just finally realize that potential? And in order to do that, we have to change the way we do things. We've been doing the same thing over and over again and getting the same results. And I believe it was Einstein who said that that's the definition of madness. So if we want different results, we have to do things differently. And I'm here to do things differently, to bring inspiration and passion and vision to this city.
Do you live in Ward 8, yes or no?
Yes.
What are your thoughts on representation and residency?
That's a really good question, Joey. I do believe that candidates who are looking to represent a ward should live in the ward. I believe, especially at the municipal level, I mean, it hits closest to home when you think about what municipal leaders have to deal with, be it councillors and mayors. You have to be a beneficiary of the decisions that you're making. If you make a decision for residents of the ward, that decision has to impact you and your family. You have to be within reach. You have to understand the needs of the ward, your neighbors. You have to know your neighbors and know their needs. And they have to know you and know your needs and know that you're accessible to them and vice versa. So I am very much of the opinion that at this level of government, absolutely 100%, if you're looking to rep, and that's really what representation is. If you represent a ward, you must live in the ward. And I know quite a few candidates who are running in this by-election who do not live in the ward. They have the option to move into the ward prior to making a decision to run. That's always an option. And I would encourage people who are looking to run to move to the ward, absorb the ward, experience the ward, and then decide to run in the ward, especially at this level.
What are two of your citywide priorities for Hamilton?
One of my priorities is a strong youth focus for the future of this city. We know now that there are many issues with our youth. Our youth are engaging in quite a bit of crime. The youth crime rate has increased. We know that a lot of young people, especially those who experienced COVID, were now seeing the after effects of the isolation and the loneliness. We need more programming to support youth. We need to deter youth from delinquencies. I've often said to friends and colleagues that nowadays we see youth involved in crime ranging from mischief to murder. Murder being that of Belinda Sakodi that happened downtown. She was shot by a 17-year-old. And so I want to make sure that we have a really strong youth focus here in the city. And I don't feel that we've done that very well. I feel that what that looks like to me is positioning youth to take up spaces in leadership in this city. Because whatever we're doing now, we are doing it for the next generation, as this really common indigenous theory that speaks to seven generations. Whatever we're doing now, we have to think seven generations ahead. And if we are thinking seven generations ahead, and we're not including the generations that are coming right behind us, then that in itself is ridiculous to me. We need to have a succession plan, and I feel that the youth of this city play a huge role in the future of this city. So that's a strong focus for me. I want to see more programs for youth. I want to see more youth involved in leadership. I want to see more youth at the solution providing table, at the decision-making table. I want to see youth being encouraged to vote. And the other part is community safety and affordability for me. Community safety looks like going back to the basics. Know who your neighbors are. Know who lives next door to you. Know which routes, which parks are accessible to you. Know which families go there. Look out for one another. Connect with each other and share ideas as to how to be complete communities. We are in a time where there's so much economic pressure on many families. I remember growing up in Nigeria and being in the UK, I had neighbors who would come over and ask for spices and milk and eggs and vice versa. You don't really see that anymore. Everyone's just kind of ventured into their own little space. And so I want to see Hamiltonians and Ward 8 residents really start to lean into each other and be a stronger community, supporting each other where there is struggle with affordability, where there is struggle with a sense of belonging, where there is struggle with feeling safe. I think that's something that we can do well once we all come to the table to do that, and then lean on the institutions that can provide those services and supports as well. So I really would love to see a strong sense of community-mindedness, community connectedness geared towards safety, belonging, and affordability.
What are two of your priorities for Ward 8?
Thank you for that question, Joey. I started answering the last question by saying that I am really, really interested in seeing Hamiltonians, particularly Ward 8 residents, have a strong feeling of connectedness, have a strong feeling of community-mindedness. And that looks like, you know, at the level of each household being truly connected in that group, be it a family or roommates as students or just friends living together, whatever representation abides in that home, everybody truly being connected. Then extending that to your next door neighbor, extending that to people on your street, extending that to people in your immediate neighborhood, and then really bringing that all back in where we are truly connected, motivated, and functioning community. I would love to see that in Ward 8. I think we've done that really well in different communities. I know of different community groups that work really well and support each other, different mom groups. If you go to Westmount, you get to see a lot of these groups and a lot of the parks as well. I think that's great. But let's really find a way to bring it all together so we are truly feeling, like I said, that sense of belonging and that sense of community. So that would be one. The second one will be infrastructure and programming. I mean, it's no new story that our roads in Hamilton are challenging. And I will say the same about Ward 8. Upper James, for instance, is not a very safe street, neither to drive or to walk or to cycle. As a matter of fact, I would not recommend anyone attempt biking down Upper James unless you have a death wish. I would love to see us being more proactive and preventative in our spending and less reactive. Let us make sure that when we are engaging contractors to build roads, we are again thinking about the long-term results that we're going to get. We're looking at quality. We're looking at longevity. We're making sure that we have bike lanes and walk paths that are safe for families and young children. Many of us who live in Ward 8, you know, we have easy access to streets and parks and whatnot. But there are many people who transition through Ward 8. We want them to come through Ward 8 respecting the residents that live here, understanding that we are a safe environment. And so I think ultimately I want to see infrastructure speaking to those things. I want to see us having much improved spaces where young people can come together and learn from each other and connect. I want to see parks that have been fitted to last 5 years and in year three check to ensure that, you know, they're not dilapidated. I want to see a ward that is truly functional for the purpose of the residents of this ward.
The city of Hamilton is facing a fiscal crisis. According to the city's own financial projections, the city's discretionary reserve is forecast to be down to just $1 in 2027. The city's last fiscal update was in November 2023, so none of us know the current state of city finances. In November 2026, when the new council term begins, decisions will need to be made. What are your thoughts on this coming fiscal cliff, and how do you plan to approach budgeting?
I think it's important, Joey, to move ahead and to move ahead clearly. We have to be very knowledgeable about where we're coming from and how we've gotten there. There's a saying that I often repeat to my kids, don't look where you've fallen, look at where you stumbled. Where have we stumbled in Hamilton when it comes to budgeting? I know from all my years here, I've often heard, actually always heard, that City of Hamilton has not done a good job of being fiscally responsible with our spending. You know, there's often been one story of scandal or another. I think it is important for City Council and those responsible for budgeting in the city to assume a standard of responsibility, to assume a standard of honesty, to assume a standard of dignity. And all of that being that they work for the residents of the City of Hamilton. It should be unheard of that our reserves in this City of Hamilton would be almost at depleting levels. How do we then serve the residents of the city? I tell you what's been happening. We're told, oh, your taxes are going to go up because we have no money and therefore you have to pay for it. I shouldn't be responsible for your delinquency. You should take responsibility for your delinquency and ensure that it doesn't happen again. So my approach to budgeting is very much along the lines of accountability. We have to go back and figure out what happened. Know that we will not tolerate those kinds of things from happening again. And then move forward with a strong sense of responsibility to the residents that have entrusted us to be responsible for them.
As Ward 8 councillor, you will have around $2 million a year in discretionary funds to allocate. How do you plan to manage these funds?
That's a good question, Joey. I think there are many ways that those funds can be allocated. I've spoken about my priorities for the ward. I want to see infrastructure development. I want to see spaces where families and youth and older adults, seniors can come together and enjoy each other in community. I want to see our roads functional so you're not driving on a road and feeling like you're on a roller coaster ride. You're not having to fix your car more often than you need to. I want to see community-led initiatives being empowered. There's so many people with great ideas about bringing community together and about strengthening community and really instilling the values that will speak to complete communities. I would really love to empower community groups, organizations, nonprofits to do that. And I think this is something that you want to lean into the residents of Ward 8 to ask those questions and say, look, how would you, ultimately, these dollars are for the residents of Ward 8. So these aren't decisions that will be made entirely by me. You want to go back to the community. And that's what I love to do. I've done that in my work in community over the last decade, and I continue to do that. No one, no leader should operate in silos, and no leader should make finite decisions alone. So you want to lean back into the community and say, where do you think these dollars should go? How do you think they should be best spent? How would these dollars cause you to feel like you're getting a return on your investment? And I'm always open to doing that.
You're promising to improve City Hall. I'm feeling exhausted on this topic because I heard every candidate in the 2022 change election promise they were going to make City Hall transparent. If elected, you'll have 1 year inside City Hall. How will you use this year to prepare an action plan on transparency?
Thanks for that question, Joey. I want to start with promises. I've been outdoors speaking to residents, and a lot of people try to get you to make promises, and I find that to be interesting. My response is, this is not a campaign of promises. This is a campaign of partnerships. We build partnerships for purpose. Our purpose is for functionality. Our purpose is for accountability. Our purpose is for responsibility and, like you said, for transparency. If we are in office, and I say we being hoping to be elected, if council is in office and the mayor is in office and our duty is in service to residents of Ward 8, in my case, to Hamiltonians overall, how is it that it has become acceptable or it is in practice that there are constant breaches at City Hall, that there is a lack of transparency, that there is a lack of access to information? I feel like that is basic. It should be the case that we are constantly responding to residents when it comes to the goals that we've set for ourselves as a city. Speaking about transparency, like I said, I started with partnerships. I would encourage colleagues at council to be transparent. We would have conversations, and those conversations don't have to be had at city council, at the table, prolonging meetings. Those conversations can be had outside of that space, where you build true connection and true partnerships, where you refocus on the goals and the benefits to Hamilton and Hamiltonians. And we need to have a loop back. It's one thing to say, oh, well, let's be transparent. Let's make sure we're letting the people of Hamilton know. But it's another thing not to have trackers to ensure that that's happening. Let's have measurable outcomes for transparency. Let the mayor and city council declare what those outcomes are, and let us hold us as residents and Hamiltonians hold city council accountable, and let councillors and the mayor also hold themselves accountable.
October 8th, you'll be sworn into office and take your seat in the council horseshoe. On that day, council will vote on zoning reforms, including upzoning Upper James between the Link and Rymel, and residential zoning reform to permit medium-density missing middle housing along minor and major arterial roadways. The housing crisis will be a literal day-one issue for you. How will you approach planning approvals, and how will you use zoning reform to address housing shortages?
I'm going to keep this very basic, Joey. I believe that everybody, regardless of background, requires a decent place to lay their head at night, requires a feeling of belonging and safety, like I have said before. I believe that is the responsibility of all of us to ensure that this is provided to those who may be struggling. I know that in Hamilton, we have struggled with the affordability crisis for some time. I would say for quite some time. I know that we're not responding quick enough. We're not responding efficiently enough. What I would do is I would ensure that when we're making decisions around zoning and about building or development, that we are considering the gap that has been longstanding in this community and ensuring that we are doing our possible best, not just bare minimum, our possible best to meet the needs in the community. I would ensure that if there are tall buildings being built within Hamilton, that they have affordable homes within them. There is room for families and individuals who are struggling, who have low income, geared to income housing. I would ensure that having more density is important, because we can't all have a nice little home on 2 acres while there's so many people in the streets. We all have the responsibility to ensure that our communities are serving members of our communities and not just ourselves. So if we can all adjust a little bit so everyone feels safe, everyone has a home to lay their head, everyone understands that they are welcome here and they're welcome to thrive here, I think that's really important. So when we speak about zoning, when we speak about development, when we speak about building, we have to ensure that we're leaning in to what it looks like for those who may not be able to afford and creating space so that they can.
Let's discuss development charges. Mississauga Mayor Carolyn Parrish was elected on June 10, 2024. She formed a housing task force that first met on July 10th and issued a comprehensive report 6 months later in January 2025. The report's action plan was implemented by a unanimous vote of Mississauga City Council. It creates deep incentives for new market affordable and family housing and has time limits to ensure developers actually build. This proves municipalities can respond quickly to housing market conditions. What are your thoughts on development charges? Do you have goals for development charge reform, and how will you approach this issue if elected?
100%. I think we should take a cue from Mississauga and the efficiencies that they have realized in having a plan and executing that plan, but also communicating with residents to ensure that that plan is not only receivable and acceptable, but viable. I'm not against development charges, but when development charges are impinging on the efficiencies that are necessary to address our affordability crisis, to address the housing needs of the community, then we need to look at that and really ask ourselves if we're making the right decisions. So I think I will always bring that back to the table and say, look, are we empowering building in our community? Are we empowering development in our community that is attuned to the needs of our community? And we need to make every decision around, whether be it development charges, be it taxes, around back to that goal. Are we doing this in the best interest of our community and the growth we seek in our community?
Road safety is a significant issue in Ward 8. Upper James is by far Hamilton's most dangerous road, with nearly every section significantly more dangerous than average for both motorists and pedestrians. What's your plan to address safety on Upper James? Does your plan include unpopular but necessary changes? And if so, how do you plan to implement them?
Thank you, Jerry. I think I spoke to this earlier. I've worked personally on one end of Upper James to another. When I came to Hamilton, I was underemployed and I worked at the Reitmans in the Walmart Plaza. When I found my way back into my career, I worked at St. Joe's, right at Upper James and Rymal. And so I've transitioned and travel often from one end of Upper James, going all the way actually to the airport where it becomes Highway 6. And we know that there's a lot of traffic congestion in Upper James. We know that Upper James is one of the most dangerous streets, not just on the mountain, but in Hamilton. We know that Upper James is not a safe space for pedestrians. We know that Upper James is not a safe space for a motorist, because I can't begin to tell you how often I've encountered accidents on Upper James myself. So I think it's very important to be deliberate about Upper James has so much potential, and we want to realize that potential. There's so many businesses on Upper James that can be highlighted. If we revisit design around the city, I believe there was a complete streets report that was conducted. And we know that we can have safer pedestrian walkways on Upper James. We know that we can implement better traffic calming measures on Upper James. We know that, I wouldn't recommend a bike lane on Upper James because it's just too busy. But we know that we can transition Upper James into a street or traffic way that is efficient for both pedestrians and motorists. And we can also beautify it. I would love to see some more trees in and around Upper James, or in the center of the road. I'd love to see more flowers. I would love to see us not have to ask people to walk while cars are being instructed to turn. I've seen that at Upper James and Mohawk. That's been a big issue for me all around the city, but particularly on Upper James, because a lot of motorists are not looking for pedestrians. So there are many ways and many things that we could do to ensure that Upper James is conducive to the kind of safety we want to see in Ward 8, while really celebrating and featuring the businesses, the restaurants, the community spaces. You know, my kid used to go to karate on Upper James. There used to be a wine shop on Upper James where you could go make your own wine. You know, from all the time I've been here, I have beautiful memories of Upper James, and that really is our business corridor on the mountain. So I'd love to see that highlighted.
What's your overall plan to address road safety?
So I already spoke to some of those plans, actually. I would love to see the traffic lights changed so that you don't have pedestrians and motorists receiving directions to cross the road and drive at the same time. I would love to see a delay in that. I would love to see traffic calming measures. I would love to see barriers to protect pedestrians at intersections. I would love to see bike parking at plazas here on the mountain. I would love for there to be opportunities to get around the ward in ways that resonates with the residents. If you want to bike, I want you to feel safe biking. If you want to walk, I want you to feel safe walking. If you're going to drive your car, I would love you to feel safe driving your car, and understanding that while you are in your car, there are pedestrians and there are cyclists that you need to be mindful of. I would love to see planters on sidewalks. I would love to see red light cameras to caution those who may be enticed to speed. And, you know, I'm a firm believer in consequences. And so once there are one or two consequences, hopefully that will result in a change in behavior. I think ultimately, whatever we're doing in terms of road safety here in the city, it has to be a collaborative approach. It has to be residents holding each other accountable, be it neighbors, neighbor to neighbor, or residents to non-resident, and then City Hall and councillors also stepping in to speak to the efficiency of that process as well.
Hamilton City Council meetings. Attendance, respect, and focus are all issues. I want to ask you about one specific issue. Councillors leaving, not attending, or not focusing attention on public delegates. What expectation will you set for yourself when it comes to listening to delegations as a councillor?
Well, Joey, I'm huge on respect. I'm a huge believer in respect. Self-respect, so respecting yourself and then respecting others. I think when you have been entrusted into a position of public office and public service, your number one, your primary responsibility is to serve. And in order to do so, you have to be present to serve. And I feel that it is disrespectful to Hamiltonians when councillors are not present to serve or when they are late to serve. I'll give you an example. In my business, I'm a hairstylist and I have clients from all over, from Ottawa, from Hamilton, from Toronto. Wherever you're coming from, I have a standing rule. If you are more than 5 minutes late, you pay a late fee. If you are more than 15 minutes late, I cancel your appointment and you pay me in full. That holds you accountable to respecting my time and yours. I don't know that there have been any measures in that regard, correct me if I'm wrong, to inspire city councillors to be present, to be on time, to be respectful. I think when councillors have been disrespectful, I mean, I remember, the former councillor having to oust one of the current candidates for this by-election. I remember that. But I don't know that there are long-standing and standards of requirements and consequences that will deter that kind of behavior. I will say that it is important to show up to do the job that you've been entrusted to. It is important to be respectful to your colleagues, even when you disagree with them. I think that's just maturity. And if you can't show maturity, then perhaps you shouldn't be doing the job to begin with. I think perhaps there should be some orientation for councillors when they come on board to say, this is the standard of expectation that we have of you. And should you derail from it, these are the consequences. And then we implement those consequences because all of the council proceedings are broadcast. And I know some people may not care about their reputation, but you want to ensure that you are leading by example, especially when you're in a seat of authority in this city.
Ontario's Municipal Act was amended to make mayors more powerful and more accountable as the head of council. How do you believe strong mayor powers have changed the role of councillors, and how do you see yourself effectively achieving your platform in cooperation with the mayor and the 14 other councillors?
Thank you, Joey. I started this podcast by speaking about partnerships and how important it is to build partnerships and to collaborate. All of the work I've done in community, working with community organizations, working with small businesses, I sit on three boards, working with fellow board members, working with employees of those organizations, have been done in partnership and collaboration. I think that should be the bone, the skeleton of any plan, of any group of people aspiring to do good work in service to a community. I believe that it is important to be able to speak to people and reach consensus. And you don't just speak to people, you listen and you understand. I believe that there are many ways that you can get to your desired outcome without having to lean on the totalitarian comes to mind, but that's really not my intended word. Without having to lean on a situation where strong mayor power would have to be used, I think it is important if we are truly looking to build consensus around City Hall, to stop wasting time in going back and forth and bickering. It starts with investing in the relationships amongst councillors and being prone to building partnerships and collaborating. So I'm not a fan of strong mayor powers. I don't think it's necessary at all. If we are prioritizing healthy relationships amongst the people who have been entrusted to lead us in this city.
What are two changes you will propose to improve city services?
I'll start with customer service. I mean, my first job in this country was at Tristan and Izzo, which was a store geared to women's professional attire and women's professional clothing. And that was my first real experience with customer service. It requires communication. It requires attention. It requires attentiveness. It requires responsiveness. I think there is room for improvement in all those areas when it comes to the way City Hall communicates with residents and vice versa. I would love to see customer service much improved. I would love to see a 311 service where we can offer feedback to City Hall about our needs in, I speak specifically to Ward 8 residents, but also all across Hamilton. I would love to see responsiveness to the needs of community when it comes to roads, like I mentioned earlier, when it comes to parks and recreation spaces, particularly in the ward where we have one recreation center, a Westmount serving 40,000 plus residents. I would love to see responsiveness to community programming for youth. And so I think the communication part is key to me, both within City Hall and then extending from City Hall to community and vice versa, and really building sustainable systems that promote efficiency for our community and build trust. That's the most important thing, build trust.
What are two changes you will propose to improve quality of life in Hamilton?
So I know as a social person myself and somewhat of an extrovert mixed with a bit of introversion, I think it's important for Hamiltonians to truly feel a sense of belonging and community, like I started by saying. So particularly for our youth, I will reiterate that it's important to have safe spaces where young people can come together, and these spaces that will foster thought and engagement, that will foster dreams, and that will foster inspiration. I think that's really important. So I'd love to see more spaces where youth can come together to do that. I've also spoken about community-led initiatives that would empower communities at all levels, young children, infants, toddlers, teenagers, young adults, middle-aged people, families, and older adults and seniors. I think there is so much quality of life to be had when you are in good relationships with your neighbors and with your friends. So I would love to see that. I would love to see that happen for sure. The other thing I would like to see, I mentioned at the start of this podcast, is investment in infrastructure, and infrastructure being our roads, our schools, our parks, spaces where we can really enjoy life. More importantly, it is affordability and access. I would love to see a city where we are truly investing in giving our residents and Hamiltonians the opportunity to enjoy life without having the burden, the economic burden of having to pay for those experiences. I would love to see more festivals that brings people together, you know, free festivals. I would love to see the city engage young people coming to City Hall for a tour. I don't see why the city of Hamilton cannot have a little museum in there or something, or have a little program where the mayor or councillors are taking residents and young people and youth on a tour. I'd love to see more community connectedness across the board. And so I think it would really come down to investing in programming and infrastructure and investing in the relationships that exist within community and within City Hall and residents. But more importantly, doing so with the mindset of affordability and safety.
It's August 2026. I'm writing a review of the four-year council term that's just ending. What three words do you hope I'll use to describe your 10 months as a city councillor?
Wow, three words. All right. I would have to say the first one for me would be joy. I want to see Hamiltonians be joyful again. I want to see Hamiltonians have a smile on their face. I want to see Hamiltonians really feel proud to be from this city, because we are on track to do all the things that we've had potential to do but haven't really realized. So joy is important to me. The next one would be hope. I know that in my years here, hopelessness has increased. A lot of people have hope that has been eroded either by what we see displayed, you know, at city council meetings, either by the affordability and housing crisis, either by the economic conditions, the lack of jobs, the interest rates. I would love to see people have hope again, knowing that in Hamilton, we have everything we need to succeed. We just need to come together with good leadership, vision to make it happen. And then beyond hope, I would say courage, boldness. I want to say that we were courageous. I want to say that we did things differently. We didn't lean on culture that has not served us, a rinse, repeat, and recycle culture. I want to say that we've been deliberate about succession planning and about bringing youth into leadership and about bringing their voices into problem solving and bringing up solutions to our issues. So that would be it. I think it would be hope, joy, and boldness and courage.
What experience has most motivated you to seek a seat on Hamilton City Council?
Wow, Jerry, that's a good question. I think it should be what experiences. It's hard to pick what's most motivated me, but I will tell you this. I have two young children. They are 10 and 8, and they were both born in the city, both born at St. Joe's. And I think about their future here in this city, and I know that I don't want it to be what it is now. When we think about youth crime, I mentioned the 17-year-old who killed Belinda Sakodi downtown. I haven't mentioned, but, you know, we hear about 10-year-olds here on the mountain at schools using bear spray on their peers and other people. We hear about 13, 14, 18-year-olds engaging in robbery at jewelry stores, all sorts. This is not the Hamilton that I've ever envisioned, and this is not the Hamilton that I want to envision. I know that we can do so much better. And so I really do want Hamilton to fulfill the promise that brought me here, which is to ensure that this is a great, safe, wonderful, ecstatic place to raise children and to age successfully. That would be it for me. And I know that we can. I've never lost hope. For those who know me in community and who know my work, that's always been my story. I wear Hamilton with pride, especially when I go to Toronto, so they know. But wherever I am, I've always believed that we are a city with much promise. And we've always been on the periphery of that promise. It's time to cross over. And so that's what it is for me, knowing that we have hope and that we can realize our potential.
Thank you. That's the end of the questions. Do you have any closing remarks you'd like to share?
Joey, this election is very important to me because it was an election that we didn't predict, but it is also a blessing to us here in Hamilton because it is one step ahead of the general elections which are happening next year. I feel that Hamilton is at an inflection point, like I mentioned in my campaign announcement video. And whatever we do now has to be with the mindset of realizing the Hamilton that we all deserve. I believe that the choices we make in leadership are a key element in realizing the Hamilton that we deserve. We cannot lean back on systems, on individuals, on people, on leadership, on a culture that has not served us. We cannot continue to rinse, repeat, and recycle. We must forge ahead with new ways, new ideas, new individuals. We must have a succession plan that involves youth. We must continue to believe that Hamilton is not only a city of potential, but is a city that will realize its potential. And we can do that by making the right choice in this election. And I believe that that choice is me. I've proven myself in community with my work, with different community organizations, being a bridge builder as a small business owner, being an advocate for other small businesses. And I think it's so important that we understand that whatever happens in this by-election can set a tone for the rest of Hamilton ahead of the general election. And we don't want to lean back into the cultures that hasn't served us. Finally, I'll give an analogy that I give my kids. I tell my kids all the time that Hamilton is a big city, but imagine Hamilton in small little pieces and each piece in the hands of every single Hamiltonian. And we all have the responsibility to work our piece for the bright future of the city. And I want to end by encouraging everyone to make sure you get out to vote. That is one way to work your piece. If you live in Ward 8, you must take advantage of the opportunity to choose leadership that will serve you, that will represent you joyfully, boldly, and courageously. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us.